Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
I'm Johnny B. Good, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's how we own it.
What's up, family? I'm your girl, Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of Street Politicians, the place,
where the streets and politics meet.
What's going on, my son Lennon?
You know, just putting up with it. This weather is freezing.
Everywhere
is cold. It ain't like warm nowhere.
All over America, except in Miami.
I guess that's what they say. They say, you know, it's always warm in Miami.
Yeah, well, not always. I used to live an hour and a half south of Miami, and sometimes you need your coat.
Like a jacket or coat?
No, you know, 40 degrees is cold, you know, especially for them. It's places like Atlanta that really make me laugh though, because they still, in all these years, have not been able to catch up with weather issues, even though Georgia's weather has changed so much. And so whenever it gets cold or there's a snow, little bit of snow, it shuts down the whole town. And people are like on the roads for hours and hours. And in fact, that happened in Virginia just a few weeks ago, where people were on the road stuck for maybe like 24 hours because of snow that is nothing like what we get in New York. So I guess, you know, other places, they don't like the snow.
Yeah. Snow. I mean, snow is cool.
It's cool when it first happens.
Yes. It just stops travel. It makes it hard to move. You're sliding, you're slipping. You know, in theory, snow is cool. But in reality, it hinders a lot of stuff, man.
No, it's good for kids. It's good for kids. So there's a lot happening in the news. And I think one particular situation that most of us have been watching for a while is that of the case of Lauren Smith Fields. She was 23 years old, I believe, went on a date with someone that she met online from Bumble. And that evening, I guess, she died. There was lots of drugs in her system. The man who she was with at first was, I think he called the police. But then after calling the police, he may have disappeared. But once they were able to interview him or talk to him, they found that he was a very nice man. And they decided that they would not investigate him and they would let him go and just decide that she had a drug overdose. This happened in Connecticut. The man happens to be a white man. And there has been outrage for a while about this situation. When I first saw it, it was about 2 months ago. I reached out to Miss Fields' family members, and had just been trying to see, you know, what could we potentially do to support, but they have a great attorney who used to be one of the presidents of one of the Connecticut NAACP. And so he had been working and, you know, different people involved. And then Cardi B spoke out about the situation. She, you know, first of all, as far as they were concerned, the report that came back, the autopsy in this particular jurisdiction in Connecticut, their position was that it was a closed matter, that it was, you know, accidental or drug overdose, and that's it. So they were not even going to potentially look at, you know, whether she had a history of drug abuse or, you know, where did these drugs come from, you know, whether or not this man supplied the drugs. They weren't even going to look into any of those things. But when Cardi spoke out about it, it brought more attention. You started to see more information pick up online. I know also some time ago, Sean King had been talking about the case. So now it seems that there is going to be an investigation. A criminal investigation has happened. Bumble has sort of come back into the conversation. At first, their statement was very dry. You know, corporations try their best to stay away from anything as it relates to protecting Black women, unfortunately, and just Black people in general, and which is a major critique. But they now have weighed in. There will be a criminal investigation. And that's a real, real good thing for this family that has really been mourning the loss of their daughter and feeling so broken about what happened to her.
Yeah, it was very, very crazy, tragic, man. I've been reading up on it. You know, good to see they're actually opening a criminal case on it, man. Shout out to Cardi B for, you know, utilizing her voice and her platform. And just speaking of Cardi, you know, Cardi just got some good news in the news lately. You know, she was awarded for her defamation suit against, I forgot who exactly it was.
I don't think she's a YouTuber. She's like, I don't know. She's maybe in, I don't even know what we call, I don't want to be disrespectful to the work that they do, but I guess she's a blogger. She does YouTube videos. And I think she has a podcast as well. Her name is Tasha K.
So yeah, she was she had put out some allegations about Cardi B, and after years of litigation, you know, Cardi was awarded almost about $4 million, roughly, mm-hmm. if not more or less. And you know, I think it set precedence. You know, I've definitely been a victim of, you know, the quote unquote cyberbullying, mm-hmm. where they just make up things and talk about you and utilize these platforms and YouTube pages just to come up with the most outrageous and outlandish things to try to defame and discredit you. So, you know, I might try my hand in it, man. I might look and see if I can get me a couple dollars, man.
Yeah, right. I actually posted that a few nights ago after the whole situation happened. I posted that it's, you know, maybe I need to get some clips from YouTube and call some of the lawyers, the many lawyers that I know. In fact, three lawyers went into the comment section like, let's do it. Like, let me know when you want to file, you know, against some of these folks. Because to your point, you know, people spend a lot of time. Sometimes I look at the YouTube hits, and I have been guilty of not using YouTube and all these other platforms for my own reasons, right? Like, there are people who are literally making money every day on our names because they need the clicks, they need the subscriptions, they need the likes. And
subscribe, hit the like button.
You know, but I actually am like, damn, I'm not even using it as much on my own name. And, you know, on one hand, I really, first of all, don't have a lot of time. And I know Cardi doesn't either. So, you know, it takes a good legal team that keeps things going, but I don't have a lot of time or energy for it. However, and the other part of it is that clearly these are people that are so desperate. They need your content in order to, or need you to make content, because they don't have anything that they can talk about that would help them to be able to, you know, be successful on these platforms on their own. So they need to be able to use the names of other people who have following, who have support, who have haters, and they need that. And I think it's pretty pitiful when your entire platform is being built off of you trying to discredit, destroy, defame another individual. And you know, and in this particular situation, there were things that she said about Cardi that probably would have never progressed in court, right? Because either it came up in one of Cardi's songs, or she said something that gave, that alluded to these different issues. But the one thing that you can't do is say that someone has a venereal disease, or that someone is having is sleeping with someone and you don't know what you're talking about. That's a problem. You can't actually do that, because that's when it becomes defamation. And I know for sure that people have said things like that and even worse about me. So, hey, like you said, you never know. And I'm really going to get, I'm going to have some folks take the time, because I don't watch or listen to any of that at all. But I probably need somebody to make some clips and send it to me so we can make a determination about whether or not it's something we want to pursue.
Yeah, man. Listen, I'm very vocal and I have opinions about different people, and sometimes they're not favorable, but their opinions based on something that I know, you know? So I don't never state anything as fact that's not fact. You know, for me, it's just lies. If you want to make lies about somebody, if you're going to tell a story, if you go be like, yo, I don't really like your shirt, or I don't think somebody could rap good, or those are your opinions, I'm cool with all that. That's, you know, that's critique. That's when you're a public figure, you open yourself up for levels of critique.
Absolutely.
You have opinions of you. But when you start making bold-faced lies about somebody did this and somebody stole this and somebody did this, now you're utilizing your platform to discredit and lie on somebody. Mm-hmm. And that's what the problem is for me, because I don't care what you think about me. That's good. You got an opinion about me. When you lie, it's just stupid. You know, it just doesn't make sense. So shout out to Cardi for probably setting precedence in this era right now, and letting people know that, look, you can have your own opinion, but you don't get to have your own facts.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you're right. It's not about whether or not people like me, or they think I'm good at what I do or not good at what I do. That's not relevant. Whether they think that the Democrats are, you know, I'm loyal to the Democrats. But when people start saying you being paid by the Democrats, that is slander, because the Democrats have never paid me a damn dime. In fact, the Democrats try to run in the opposite direction from me so that they don't have to be associated with whatever other lies that other people have told. And by the way, this is not just about YouTubers and bloggers. I even have major newspapers, like major publications, that have printed complete lies. And, you know, and hey, that's an even different situation. I don't know if I'm looking for money from JoJo, who has a podcast or a YouTube page. I'm not even think that's not even my goal. But I think, like you said, continuing to set a precedent that this internet stuff, what people are doing, the bullying, as you said, the harassment, it needs to end somewhere.
And I just want to send out my condolences to the great Regina King, who lost her son recently. The whole world was shocked by that, man. I know that you have a level of communication with her, so, and you actually met her son. So, you know, we were together when the news happened, and I seen how you responded to that. So I just want to send out my condolences to her.
Yeah, that's the saddest thing ever. Regina King is a beautiful, beautiful woman. I spent some time during the summer with Regina and Ian, the summer of 2021. And the relationship between them, it's so beautiful that I sat and thought to myself, wow, okay, I want to make sure that my son, like, you know, when I talk to him, that I say it like this or that. Like, I was watching them and in my mind mimicking how much better my relationship would be if I handled certain discussions, because we were talking about everything. You know how that goes. The summertime, we were kicking it. We were eating, drinking, chilling, hanging together. And, you know, and we were together for hours. Shout out to my girl, our friend, Marvette Brito, because she is friends with Regina and she brought us all together over dinner. And, you know, as we sat there, even his maturity and how he was able to talk about his mother's career and different things, different stories of things that, you know, those old war stories. I sat there and listened to them and I was in awe of the connection, the bond that the two of them have. And so to know that he died by suicide is so painful. It is so painful. And there is a state legislator. His name escapes me at this moment, but he's a young Black man who also has died by suicide in the last few days. Also, another friend of ours who we will, you know, of course, protect the identity of these individuals. And I think it's not a secret, but nonetheless, another friend of ours who is a minister, his daughter died by suicide just in the last several weeks, also in her 20s. There's something going on. You know, as you've been saying, and you and I have debated and discussed this whole issue of people during a pandemic being locked in their homes, being away from people, away from their regular movement, you know, away from folks who might check on you, can see something in your eyes, the changes in how you operate. There's something to be said about that. And I just, you know, I don't even know how to express to Regina and his father, Ian Sr., you know, how sorry I am about the loss of their son. I'm sure that she will come out of this as a powerhouse and do something great, you know, in this area. So God bless her. That's all I could say is God bless her.
Definitely God bless her, man. Like I said, we are living in very traumatic times, man. So much trauma. Like you said, the pandemic, just the streets in general, violence. It's just so many things. I've watched, you know, people that I know, I've seen mental, just your mentality is just shifted in this time, you know, and it's harder to deal with, you know. So I'm praying for our youth. I'm praying for everyone who's dealing with that trauma. I'm praying for everyone who's having those thoughts right now, you know, that you reach out to somebody, you know, get you some therapy, get you someone that you feel comfortable talking to, but don't hold it in.
Right.
You know, and don't get to a place where it's so dark that you feel like that's your only option. So
absolutely. And you can never, and you never know why people make these decisions. So you can never think you're above it.
So once again, RIP to Ian, and our love goes out to Regina King in her time of mourning and loss.
Supreme Court Justice Breyer is retiring in 6 months, which means that there is an open Supreme Court seat coming up. I think if anybody understands anything about politics and the way that our society works, the Supreme Court nominations and confirmations are extremely important. This is how decisions are made, final decisions at the highest levels of the courts in our society. This is how decisions are made. Right now, we already have too many conservative people on the bench, on the Supreme Court, that does not allow us to be as progressive as we need to be to fight against all of this craziness that's going on, voter suppression laws, abortion issues, a woman's right to choose. There are so many things that's happening in our society. And we have always depended on the Supreme Court as an option, as a forum that we would be able to go to get, have some kind of fairness. So with a seat coming up, thank God he's retiring while there is a president in office that leans towards a more liberal, or the more liberal side. So hopefully they will put and get someone confirmed, nominate someone who is more likely to side with, you know, people like Sonia Sotomayor, the Supreme Court Justice from the Bronx, right? So hopefully we will find that type of individual and have them confirmed. Now, the whole talk of the town is that during the campaign, which there was a lot said during the campaign, canceling student debt, dealing with criminal justice reform, that this administration has not made good on. But one of the things that they said was that, one of the things that President Biden said was that he would nominate a Black woman to the Supreme Court if a seat became open. So here we are. Now he has already put 8 Black women at the appellate court level, which is good, but the Supreme Court is the highest court in the land and it is beyond time. I saw so many people from, you know, Nina Turner to, you just name it, all these folks, Congresswoman Cori Bush tweeting, it's been time to have a Black woman sit on the Supreme Court. So here's our shot.
So do the right thing, Joe. Come on. Do the right thing.
But any Black woman won't do. So we have to make sure.
Got to make sure. Look, we're going to vet. We're not doing, you know, we're not doing, what do we call it?
Identity politics.
We're not doing that. We failed at that already. You know, we've tried that. You know, moving forward, we need the right Black people in position, but we don't want just any Black person in position. So do the right thing and get the right person.
Right. So we'll see.
Yes, we will.
So for my thought of the day, I was sitting, you know, first of all, of course, people are watching. New York, 2 police officers were murdered here just in the last few days. Sick, sad, depressing, young men. I don't care if they were 90 years old, doesn't matter, but they still were young men. They didn't deserve it. It's so painful. I don't like to see people be murdered in general. Forget about cop, guy on the street, neighbor, you know, family. Like, it's just, it's the worst thing when, it's the worst of us, when people take the lives of other people literally for no reason at all. And it's just, it cripples the city. It hurts so many people when you see things like that happen. And so, you know, for those families, same with the Regina King situation, it's a lot of people hurting, a lot of people hurting. And I certainly send my condolences to the families of these 2 officers and to the entire police force, because that is a scary feeling that you can show up for work, go to respond to a dispute, and be shot by someone in a situation you can never even imagine. I was thinking to myself, these 2 officers probably were going, you know, gonna go try to help out with this dispute that seemed to be happening between a mother and son, you know, probably laughing in the car or wherever they were, talking to each other. Okay, now let's get out, let's deal with this and keep it moving. Who would have thought that moment would be the end of their lives? It's wrong. And there's no excuse you can make for it. There's no political explanation, none of it. Yes, of course, there's some sickness and some deep mental illness issues that need to be addressed. But even with that, still, these 2 men should be alive. These 2 officers should be alive. Then you have the loss of life of the son of a woman who had to call the police because she was in a dispute with her son. So now he also is deceased. It's just way too much death. And the thing that I was thinking, because of course, you start to see what happens all the time, that the elected officials run to how to, you know, go back to old things. We're never really creating a new cycle, a new system, or really focusing on where guns are coming from. And I'm not talking about Ray Ray getting on the train or getting in his car, driving down to Virginia. I'm talking about how the guns got to Virginia, how the guns get to Connecticut and other places in large numbers. And there are no checks and balances on these weapons. That's the real work for me. So when I hear or I see a blueprint from Eric Adams that I think, you know, where he is focusing on Mayor Eric Adams in New York City, you know, focusing on what to do to reduce gun violence, which I'm sure there's pressure from the business community, there's pressure from Black folks, there's pressure from the clergy, there's pressure from everybody. And for him as a former cop to lean in the direction of, and also go ahead and say that he's going to reinstitute a modified sort of stop and frisk program and call it something different so that it can get around the decision that was made by the courts that stop and frisk is unconstitutional. It really is it's disrespectful, it's painful. And for someone who was deeply involved in fighting to get the court decision and to get at that time Mayor Bloomberg and the police commissioner Ray Kelly to call off stop and frisk, which they really just changed the names to broken windows, but now going on into too many things, it's painful for me because I'm waiting for the mayor that will come along, the president, the whomever that will come along and say, yes, we do have to get guns off the street and we've got to find a way to be able to do that. And also in the blueprint that Eric Adams has released, he talks about dealing with mental health, dealing with education, and understanding that the focus has to be all those things. So I'm glad to hear that. Let's see how it works out. Because usually everybody says health, education, this, that, and the third. And what is the actual focus, what gets the most resources and the most play is the punitive area, which is putting police on the streets that end up stopping young men who are out there, young men and older men and people who are probably not carrying weapons at all. That for me is problematic. That's actually not my thought of the day though. My thought of the day, really quick, and you can respond to this, is that I worry about though our people. Usually all the things I said would have been my thought of the day. Why do we keep doing the same things over and over again, expecting different results? But my thought of the day is actually for us, young men. What do we think is going to happen when we just shooting in the lobby of the hospital, shooting on the streets, just doing whatever, stabbing, beating up women? What do you think is going to do? We understand our people, and particularly young men. Do you understand that there is about to be open season war on you for and on your brothers and sisters who may or may not be involved in any of that type of activity? That's my thought of the day. What is going on in your mind when you think that the actions you're taking will lead somehow, like you're not leading your own war. These people have arsenal and resources and they are going to unleash on our communities.
You're 100% correct. And I was just, thinking about that, just thinking about in response, because I haven't really responded to any of these things. And usually I'm vocal on my social media about all these things. And I've just put together, a whole response to it. But that's exactly what it is. It's like, if you don't understand what's going on and where we are right now, then you are not paying attention. Mm. Like you said, they're about to have open season on us. They're going to do everything. They have body cameras to where they're going to be able to sense that you got guns on you. They got face recognition devices. They're utilizing every piece of technology. They're going to utilize. Officers are going to come up to you very aggressive now because they're aware that any interaction with people can end their lives. It's going to be a different season. And I hope that our young kings are very prepared for this, because this is what it is, man. So I'm praying that there's a wake-up call. I'm praying that these young kids understand that this is going to be time. We're talking about the crack era where they had the war on drugs. The war on violence is going to be a lot different.
It's going to be a war on violence.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, Centratech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side. That's how we
own it! So I'm super, super, super duper excited about this next guest. Over many years, I have been receiving counsel, talking to mentorship from this woman and trying to understand what in the world is happening in America. And I'm particularly attracted to her because, like me, she's always in trouble for telling the truth and saying it like it is. And so today we have with us a woman who, by the way, is a lawyer. So Black women, super, super, super accomplished. I've already said she's a freedom fighter because she speaks up all the time. She is the United States representative for the 18th Congressional District in Texas. Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee, thank you so much for joining Street Politicians.
I could not be at a happier place. I am in between going to my senior high schools to break through after we've had this moment of silence, this moment of a pandemic that has touched their lives. I wanted to let them know that their voices, their courage, their leadership, their power for change. Why don't we have a student loan debt reduction? Why are we still not having HR 40, the Commission to Study and Develop Reparation Proposals? Why do we study slavery? Why do we are still trying to march toward police reform? But why are we trying to march toward justice? It's all about democracy and what they're doing about it. But in any event, I am delighted to be here with you. And I hope that I am a street politician because I just came out of the street. Thank you so very much.
You paved the way. You the front line of street politicians, man. And you forgot to say that she got the best hair in the business. Don't forget. Please don't forget that part. It is a blessing to have you. Yeah, definitely a blessing to have you.
And we're fighting for the Crown Act. We haven't gotten it passed yet, brothers and sisters. But I will just take this moment to you all. I am the original. As they say, how should I say it? I never call myself a victim, but I am the original target of the Crown Act.
Of course you are.
In terms of the United States Congress, because I did this more than 2 decades ago. Just a quick story. I was in Africa. I had the regular style, and I had to borrow some electronic curlers. And I plugged it in and I started a fire inside the hotel room. I started a fire. They were knocking on the door saying, because I was not in the room where I plugged it in at. But to make a long story short, it didn't burn down, but I learned my lesson. And I've been happy ever since. But it was a shock to people's eyesight on the floor and standing up on the floor. And so here they went. But you know what? I never moved because I felt comfortable in my skin and in my hair. And I want all of those, whatever your hair is, as a Black woman, and any other woman that chooses, and brother, be comfortable in who you are. I'll end on that note.
I know that's right.
We can end the whole interview with that.
Right.
But I just want to know, Congresswoman, just being such a big fan of the work that you've done, how did you get your start? How did you start doing this?
You know, I have a vein, a strain. I just like to be a problem solver. I like to get in the mix. I always like to get a yes for people who've been mistreated, and I go and fight for them. I always want to get a yes. I want to be able to come back and say it's been resolved. And I also think that if you gain any power, it should be pushed out away from you to others. And so, you know, I can go back to, I was a busybody. I'm sure this will get written up in the podcast, but, you know, from high school, from middle school, I was an activist. In that time, it was student government and fighting for students and saying what students should have. That's in high school. Then coming to Yale, let me just say I was a child prodigy. So when y'all start looking at the history, I don't want people to start looking to the 1800s and seeing whether she was born in the 1800s. But let me just say that I got to college when I was 2 years old, a toddler, but I was there for the Bobby Seale trial in New Haven. I was there for the literal shutdown of the Yale campus, for example. YDS was there, every group was there. And we had to stand, we were students. I was in a Black student officer with the Black Students of Yale, BSAY, which is their 50th commemoration this year. But we literally were, we stood in the gap of all these student groups that came in to deal with the war, to deal with Bobby Seale, to deal with how Yale was responding. We cooked the gruel that everybody had to eat because there was no food. But the point is that, I mean, you had to feed all these people, but the real point is, I really cut my teeth. People think Ivy League students are, you know, just dazing and gazing. Yeah, we're doing our work, but we're doing the cerebral work that thinks about how we're going to empower our people. And at that time, it was students, diverse students. And so I started there. And I think I never looked back in terms of going I went to Africa after graduating. I traveled as just a person with, you know, by myself. I was there on a fellowship dealing with looking at the common law system versus the tribal law. I was under a guidance back in the States, but I wasn't under any guidance in Africa. And I traveled. I even have a story of going to Bogotang in Ghana, you know, traveling by bus, and I got off the bus. It was a rest stop in a village, and a woman came to say, "Will you take my baby? Will you take my baby?" I could tell I was, you know, an American in terms of my accent. I've had these kinds of experiences with the richness of the continent. I became infused with the connection, and that was some time ago. I think I've had experiences that others have not, just travel. So that brought me here, obviously a lawyer. I did corporate law. I practiced corporate law. But I was a pioneer in it because I was the only person in the firm that I went to. But then the doors opened. I was a staffer on the Hill for the Select Committee on Assassinations, which was reopening the investigation of King and Kennedy. If anybody could believe that, we actually looked at it again, still trying to find answers and what happened. And then that just generated, as I conclude, to where I am today. I was always digging into something to make it better or to get the facts. And I tell people today that this democracy that is fragile will only last if whoever you are, you dig into something to either make it better or get the facts and get the answers.
Mm-hmm. Wow, get the facts and get the answers. Mm-hmm. Oh, there is so much in that because, you know, everyone goes in different directions. So some folks as activists, you know, they go off to do diversity and inclusion work. You know, they may start schools or do that type of work, but it's something to be said about people who brave through the political process. Because I know how difficult it has been. And I can remember a time when very similar, I guess one of the reasons why I'm so attracted to you, Congresswoman, is because I've sat on the fringes with knowing I was right. you know, knowing I'm speaking up about something that's right, but people have found ways to try to ostracize me and to try to, you know, say that I'm crazy for whatever my opinions are. And then all of a sudden the world recognizes that what we've been talking about is actually fact. And I've watched that happen to you where people try to say, no, you know, she's just always mad about something. They gave you the angry Black woman, you know, no, she just wants to raise hell. And now here we are at a time when you are have become sort of front and center for some really, really important things. And I'm really proud to see that happen. I don't know, Maisana, you next, because I'll keep talking.
No, you're gonna stop me. You got something to say. I ain't gonna stop you.
No. Okay, so Washington last week, these last 2 weeks, crisis. Turning people off really bad, Congresswoman. We're hearing from folks all over the country. You and I have talked about it. They're finished with the process because voting rights is something that I think most people felt we definitely are going to pass that, you know, so we don't have to worry, you know, they weren't really focused on it. Whereas some of us as organizers, Latasha Brown, Cliff Albright from Black Voters Matter, Melanie Campbell, also Cora Masters-Berry and many other women who are a part of the National Coalition of Black Civic Participation and Black Women's Roundtable, and so many other organizers. We've been out there for months, even years. Someone like a Barbara Armwine have been talking about dealing with voting rights. I think about Reverend Barber, who said a few nights ago, he said, perhaps we're at a time when this whole thing is going to crash because it cannot hold up as it is. And I think people are feeling that level of frustration. Where are we? What happened last week? And where do we go from here? Because as you said, democracy is fragile. It always has been. But without our right to vote, I don't know what this country looks like and what our society looks like in general, what the world looks like going forward.
Failure is not an option. And I want us all to embed that in our soul and in our DNA. And you have called the roll. And all of you on this podcast, you've called the role of the sisters who've been out there. Each of them, I know them. We've been in different fights together. If I could have gotten arrested more times than I did, I would have done so. But I got arrested with Melanie and others, and others got arrested. Thank you for your work last week. And it is work. It's work of passion. And what I said to the students today is that you must take this country. It is your country. You must take it. You must take it in your hands. And so obviously last week, the persons who have the right to vote or those of us in the House who did vote and do what we're supposed to do said that we're not finished. This cannot finish. We will not have a democracy if we do not have the protection of the votes that are planning to be stolen in 2022. Right. I'm a witness right now of votes right now, as I speak, being thrown out in Texas because of the voter suppression of requiring numbers that seniors and disabled persons, they never did it before. They're not, you know, you wonder, haven't we been on TV talking? No, these people are not. They just hear the word voting rights. They think you're fighting for voting rights. They haven't heard that they have to put a number somewhere and their ballots are being thrown out. Is that happening across the country? So what I would say to those who, have poured their heart and soul, have gone to the great lengths that people go through. Reverend Barber, who's been up here, is I can't have you give up. I've got to have you to stand on the battlefield just a couple of more times because it has to be said to the leadership that steers things that we will have to come back. We've been told that we'll come back. When I say come back, it'll come back to the floor. And right. Those who have chosen to take a segregationist tool that has oppressed people of color and women from its very genesis, and just a little constitutional insight, both Madison and Jefferson said, we're through with the filibuster. That is the tyranny of the minority. And frankly, it is unacceptable. So how can people today in 2022 stand on the pompousness of the righteousness of, I just can't do anything, it's a filibuster. It is absolutely sinister. So all I can say is to them, can you just find one more gut kick that you can get so angry about, that gut kick that you're going to say, it's not bringing me down because I'm not going down with it. So it is more of what have been done. I frankly want more. We're gearing up for HR 40 because people have to listen. And, you know, I people laugh because I don't like talking about myself, but all the folk that are talking, I can match their academic credentials. I've been a judge. I've been on the Select Committee on Assassination. So I had to dig deep to be able to do what I was supposed to. I got offered a U.S. attorney's position, assistant U.S. attorney, which I turned down. I've turned corners on so many things. And so I don't allow a definition of myself externally. I'm asking those folk who put themselves on the line, listen to no one but yourself and let you be the hero and shiro of the final success of this voting rights. It is shameful that we can count Richard Nixon, George H.W., George W., and Bush and Ronald Reagan, who voted for voting rights. I mean, that's Republicans. So we have people now on Republicans, 50 locked down, absolutely absurd. And then fellow travelers of Democrats talking something that is ludicrous about a filibuster. And go on, Build Back Better, other things, reparations, HR 40. And so I'm just saying, don't let there be external definitions of who you are. Embed in your DNA what is going to make America your America. And fight until it gets done. And that's my aspect. I will fight. Of course, I'll put in the word because we're on a podcast, nonviolently for me, until it gets done. But I am not going to let a failure is not an option. And I hope that just gets out in the loudest way. I'm sure somebody's sitting back saying, oh, there we go again. It's always on us. No, I'm just saying to you, you look inside yourself. What you want to leave here, what you want to see done, then failure is not an option.
Wow, that's a lot. And I know it has to be frustrating to see two Democrats vote against something that is just human as voting rights. Like it just, I know just listening to you, understanding the groundwork in which you've been that person, you know, the stalwart on the front line fighting for these things, to know that somebody in your party is against something that's just like this, it just really must be hurtful for you just hearing it.
You know, it's like you're thirsty and you drink water, right? I mean, that's the basic saving entity. You might want to have some sweet punch or some wonderful orange juice, but you're thirsty to live, you drink water. This is about living. As I said, I have just a number of cross themes. I work for the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. I may be, beside John Lewis, one of the only members of Congress that actually went to the Auburn, worked out of the Auburn office on Auburn Street, I guess, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference in Georgia. Maybe one of the few that went on plantations that with sharecroppers at the 1800s, 1900s, to register people to vote, and had a white man sitting on the porch chewing whatever he was chewing, take out one of them skinny rifles, and we had to run like heck because we were trying to get people on the plantation to vote. So it's in my DNA. I don't often say it. At the same time, I was a judge. So what I'm saying, we come with different backgrounds. And you want to know frustration? I was there on the floor of the House. Excuse me, floor of the Senate. We weren't in session in the House. I was determined it was a sense of hope. I said, this is going to happen. It has to happen.
Because the House, stay here. The House passed.
It
passed in the House. So once the bill advanced to the Senate, the first thing that had to be done is killing the filibuster, changing the rules. So the bill could come to the floor and folks could vote on it. And they and two Democrats sided, which would not, you know, us, we're gonna call names. You didn't say it, but we're saying Senators Manchin and Sinema, they sided with all the Republicans, not even one that would vote to protect our voting rights, that would vote to change the rules for the filibuster. Now, would it have only been changed that one time, or would it be, have been changed forever, the filibuster?
That one time. It was an exception. Wow. And also it was framed like, if it's a constitutional issue, the constitutional issue usurps this so-called filibuster. And all it was a talking filibuster. Let me just humorously say, do people understand that the filibuster is that Senator Jackson Lee, Sheila Jackson Lee, could go to the floor as a senator and say, I'm going to filibuster and I'll see you, I'm going on to the Bahamas. I don't have to be anywhere. And you'll need 60 votes to break me coming on the floor saying I'm going to filibuster. Maybe I'll make some opening remarks and then I'm gone. I'll go to my office, I can go home to my district. Can anyone imagine that that would stifle the very heart and blood of democracy? That you, did you do that? And so all that was happening is the fact that you would have the responsibility of keeping the floor. And when you yielded the floor, we could then go vote on what the original bill was. And at that time it would be voting rights, freedom to vote, and on John Robert Lewis. Can you imagine that that is the simple thing that we are asking you to do? I don't think anybody could either fathom what are you talking about? And that we could not get one of the professed moderates who know that they and other Republicans, I want to ask them, how many of you all have been somewhere shining on Martin Luther King's commemoration? Mm. I bet every single person was somewhere shining through their lifespan. And when it was even more popular, being somewhere on Martin Luther King, professing your commitment to his values and feigning your hurt for his death, then why were you not there to show it when he and his family, his legacy and his family, were begging you to pass this legislation? And John Lewis, we all know, he can point to where he shed blood on the Edmund Pettus Bridge. And so, you know, it baffles us to be able to understand how people can comport their words over the years that they have been somewhere saying, making a Martin Luther King speech, for example. I know they have done it because wow. I know they've been invited. And then to equate that to the inaction, the shameful inaction of what happened on that night. And I can tell you that you want to talk about people who are saying we're through, the feeling of despair. Mm. But I had to pull that gut check and that hit. I had to pull myself up. Failure is not an option because we will not have an election in 2022 if we do not have these protections.
Yeah. Amen. Wow. Woo! You out here dropping gospel today. But as the lead sponsor on HR 40, which is related to the reparations, I want to know, what is it and where are we right now? And like Dr. King said, are we gonna get our check? We coming to get our check.
Yeah, well, that's what we wanted. The question is, when do we get the checks for, tell us, this is the last question. We know you have to go. What is the HR 40 bill? Because some folks think that means that as soon as it passes, checks start being written. That's not true. And where are we at this point?
Well, one thing I'm going to say to everybody, hang in there with me, okay? You all got to hang in there with me on HR 40. You're going to be seeing some action items coming. We've been meeting with 300 organizations, representatives thereof. Tamika, you know, because you've been on this call that we've had. And we've got, you know, from Color of Change to everybody we can possibly imagine and others. And you have been there and we are very grateful. And so we have put it out in our portfolio, in our words, why we can't wait. And we have been, I think, the most strategic. And I'm going to use the word respectful, because first it was the 2020 election. And we said, can you stand down? We got to get these people through, and we want to make sure that we're, you know, and this has been filed and coddled and filed by John Conyers in 1989, right after the reparations given to Japanese Americans in 1988, signed by Ronald Reagan. And that's why our bill came. And they, of course, are supporting us. I'm going to say yay for the Japanese Americans. So they are out there. They want to know what. But in any event, and so we have babied this thing all along. What it is, and it is powerful. Let me hold up a show and tell. Show and tell says Black and Hispanic communities bore disproportionate share of Texas early COVID-19 death. You can do a study in all 50 states and we're going to be right there. Hmm. What it is saying is that throughout presence here in this country, through the trajectory of slavery, we have felt severe disparities up to 2022. Or we can cite, and people will stand back and they'll look at people in these homes and they'll look at people playing basketball and football, and they'll look at people with fancy cars, and they will say, what are they talking about? Mm-hmm. We're talking about the reality of the massive disparities in the masses of people who happen to be descendants of enslaved Africans. And so this is a commission to study slavery and develop. We modified it and gave it an action item, reparations, which will come as analyzed in a myriad of responses. Because you cannot go to one indicia from social services to healthcare, to education, to science, to psychological, to the criminal justice system, education, that you cannot find that line that says Black people. And we have gotten to a point where our friends who do not look like us have been saying, now we get it. John Hopkins has done a study in 2021 saying there is a connection from the slave presence to now in African Americans. Mm. And of course, there is a diaspora. We must remember there was a transatlantic slave trade. And for those of us who want to see this in that view, we've got brothers in the Caribbean and sisters dealing with this because they had slavery. We've got the issue in South and Central America, the Africans in Mexico, the Africans in Brazil. I've got the largest population of Nigerians in the United States are now in Houston, not in Atlanta. So it, you know, this is going to focus on African Americans, but there are complementary efforts around the world. I want to thank my sister, Congresswoman Barbara Lee. She has been with me just two and two together. Mm-hmm. About the importance and urgency of passing this. We were together in Durban on that original conference on racism way back when people were afraid to go. And so I just want people to say, my brothers and sisters who are Caucasian, Anglo, my Latinx, Hispanic brothers and sisters, Asian, Asian Pacific, Southeast Asian, and all myriads of Black people, this should be a unifying factor. That's and right. My indigenous people, my Native Americans, who, again, I've been on pueblos, I've been on reservations. Mm. My heart aches. Mm. But as we well know, they were given those. Mm. Our land was never given. The 40 acres and a mule and Reconstruction never succeeded. Mm-hmm. And so we have a legitimate posture. Mm. To be able to see this going. And my question is to the world, to America, what do you want the world to see you as? When we talk to the world about reparations, which is a unilateral or universal human rights terminology, they get excited when they say, oh, you mean the United States would admit to the sin of slavery? Wow. They get excited. And America doesn't know what this will do for them. It will inspire human rights around the world. So Let me just say where we are is we did a historic markup. Never has it been marked up. It's out of judiciary. It's ready for the floor. But we're looking at several options. What we're doing now is we're now raising the interest for people to be pushing back to the Congress and saying, we want HR 40 now. And that's what we need. So the 300 organizations are going to be coming. We ask for our viewers and listeners to push toward the Congress. And let me be very clear. We are as anxious and as excited as what is about to happen, and I'm gonna take it as a given with trepidation and prayers, but that we will have in the months to come a person sitting on the Supreme Court at the appropriate time. Absolutely. Of Justice Breyer's leaving the bench, that was an African-American woman. That should be without further thought. And I hope that the podcast would note that we can chew gum and walk at the same time. This justice, qualified, by the way, no doubt, and nobody has to look for qualified Black women. They are there. That's that right. Done, that should not negate, that should not be, and we got this, it should not negate voting rights, police reform, and HR 40. Never negate it.
If the bill comes to the floor, are you confident about the votes at this time? Are you at least close?
We are very, very close. We are very, very close. You know, I can just say we're about three out, and we just had a meeting today. We're going for the big push.
All right.
And that is good, but we need this outside thunder.
Yeah.
To let people know it's okay. You'll be welcomed home. You will be appreciated. It is only fairness. It is not taking from someone. It is the government actions and sanctioning of slavery. I would be as much, if the government was against Quakers and characterized them as such that took things from them, took what they had. I mean, I focus on Quakers in Pennsylvania. And went and took from them all that they had there that was theirs, that they had developed. I would be with them.
That's right.
And so I'll
be with us. Be with us.
Be with us that don't look like you, and know that it is not anger, it is not anguish, it is reality.
That's right.
It is rightness and it is righteousness. And you know, John Lewis on the reparations bill, beloved by everybody, on the reparations bill. Dr. King had that insufficient check. The concept that when we come to try and get relief, it always looks like we're out of luck. So in his own words and interpretation, he was speaking to the whole issues of social justice. If we, here's a comical or either the thing that you've always heard. If you lift our boat, you're going to lift all boats.
That's right.
It is not going to be selfishly that it does not impact the greatness of America. And that's what I say. You lift us as scientists. You recognize that we, discovered blood plasma, were the sisters in NASA doing all the numbers on the blackboards, that we are astronauts, that we are scientists, that we are chemists, we are mathematicians. You make us plentiful. You're lifting all boats.
Absolutely. That's a great word. Thank you so much, Congresswoman. We have to have you back. There's so much to talk about, and you do such a good poetic job of helping us to understand where we are. And as you said, failure is not an option. So we will make sure to continue to carry that message. Thank you. And please go back to your schools and your work and, you know, be great.
Keep on doing it.
This has been exciting. I thank you for giving me the opportunity. I'll let them know. When I go in, I said, I've been called a street politician, which is where you do your business. Is it not right? Where you do your business. And it is so ironic that I'm doing this when there was some folk out in the street talking about the EPA, and they were out in the street when we got an announcement that the EPA was going to look at all this pollution in our community. And they weren't in their house. They weren't in a meeting room. They were out in the street. And I was doing a Zoom with them out in the street. Let me just say, you get your best things done in the street. Thank you for the work that you all have done. Can I call on you to push forward now in H.R. 40?
Absolutely.
And not to give up on voting rights, just to keep pushing us. The calls are coming in. And to be able to tell people it's right to have a Black woman Supreme Court justice. Now keep on pushing. Keep on pushing.
From the streets to the suites.
That's right. Say thank you, but keep on pushing. Thank you, guys. Appreciate you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Bless you.
My name is Johnny B. Good. And I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, Centratech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courtney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
That's how we own it. Listen, that was gospel. That was dope. You know, the Congresswoman is amazing. She breaks it down so simple, but it's so powerful. Yeah. You know, she just gave me a little more energy because I ain't gonna lie, I be getting jaded. You know, I'm like, man, but when you see somebody that's been in this game that long, continuing to fight, continue to have faith and not being broken, it has to give you some level of energy and some level of spirit. So
yeah, I think when you mix the conversations between the Congresswoman and now our next guest that's coming up, that's when you start to see where our power is real. So I'm excited about this next conversation that we're having.
Yep, definitely excited to talk to our brother.
He got what the people say they need, what the people need. So let's bring him on. So one of our friends is joining us today as our change maker. You know, our friends are dope. So I know there's some people who probably feel like, well, they always have their friends on. Well, we've got a lot of friends around the country doing a lot of great things. And this young brother is someone that we've been on the battlefield with. We have been, we've done civil disobedience together. We've been arrested together. So y'all probably been in the same paddy wagon. We have been out here fighting for the cause and standing together. And I particularly appreciate the level of commitment Dr. Wes Bellamy has shown to this movement. He is an author of two books. The former vice mayor of Charlottesville, Virginia. We know so much about Charlottesville, so that's a different interview for another day, just to talk more about the history of Charlottesville. He is currently the political science department chair at Virginia State University and the co-chairman of Our Black Party, which is what brings him today to our show. So thank you, Dr. Bellamy, Wes, our brother, for being with us today.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. I appreciate y'all for having me. Always peace and love to both of y'all. Thanks for all the work y'all do for the community and for the culture as a whole. I don't think we can give y'all your flowers enough, but it's definitely appreciated.
Well, it's definitely appreciated to be acknowledged by someone who fights just as hard, if not harder, than we fight. So we definitely appreciate that. So what is Our Black Party? Let us know, like, what is it?
Yeah, so Our Black Party is a political organization in which we have a 527 designation, which allows us to raise money. We're in the form of a PAC or a super PAC, if you will. And essentially we're a platform designated for Black folk. We firmly believe that there's nothing wrong with Black people owning our politics, and we have a tagline that we believe to be very true. Before you were Republican, before you were a Democrat, before you were independent, before you had any political affiliation, you were Black. And there's nothing wrong with Black people centering the needs of Black folk when we're developing political agendas. And there's nothing wrong with us saying that we have to put our needs and our interests first. So across the country, we're mobilizing and organizing with different folks in terms of being on the ground as well as on the state level to ensure that we're developing agendas and educating our people about how politics works. And furthermore, how we must stand still and be steadfast in regards to putting our needs and interests before anyone else's, because we have to look out for ourselves.
When did you start Our Black Party, and where would you say you are in the process today?
Yeah, so Our Black Party started essentially about a year and a half ago. Myself and our co-founder, the Honorable Candace Hollingsworth, who's the former mayor of Hyattsville, Maryland, the first Black woman to serve as mayor in that regard. And our other steering committee members include the Honorable Stephanie Morales, who's the first Black woman to serve as Commonwealth Attorney in Portsmouth, Virginia. We also have our brother, Rashad Lambert, who's out of Philadelphia, who's the leader of Forbes the Culture, and then former Councilwoman Leah Webb, who is the first Black woman to serve as city councilwoman and running for New York Senate in Binghamton, New York. So the five of us got together with our big brother Puff, and you know, much love to Diddy, and worked together, chimed it out, working with several folks from across the country in that regard to try to develop different ways in which we can form pathways for our people to control our own political apparatus. So that was about a year and a half ago. We caught some traction, caught some steam, and then we were just slowly building. I mean, when you're trying to build a platform like this, we have to understand that it's a marathon. Right now, we're at about 10,000 members from across the country. We have several state directors. We're in Georgia, South Carolina, Florida, Michigan, Indiana, as well as Virginia. And what we're doing right now is looking to build out. We're working with our dear sister, Teslin Figueroa, about It's All About You in 2022 in our on-the-ground political training. So we'll be supporting her as well as others. And then we have some stuff in which we're rolling out throughout the course of the year, specifically dealing with and pertaining to the 30 attorney general races across the country. We want everybody to make sure they're tapped into that. And then on the local level, how do we get our folks engaged to not only run for office, but ensure that we're writing a policy that's advantageous to our folks?
That's so amazing.
Let me just say, ask one thing, because I think, and I think this is important. Clearly you have decided that it is necessary at this point, it's critical for us to work on, you know, organizing our own folks, getting our people and our voting block, if you will, together, how we vote, our political power. We all understand that. But there are some people who come from the mindset that, well, we need our own party and we don't need to vote for the Republicans and Democrats anymore. We should just do away with that. Is that what Our Black Party is saying, or is there a process that you understand has to take place in order to get to where it is we're going?
I think it's a combination of both. So we have to understand that all of this stuff is multifaceted. At some point, we would love for us to be able to say that we have our own voting bloc, similar to what you see with AIPOC or within the Irish community. AIPOC is a Jewish entity, if you will. Similar to what you see with the Latino community or Latinx community, in which they have very formulated voting blocks and organizations that are specifically advantageous for their communities. That's what we're trying to develop. But as you alluded to, there is a process in which we have to go through. And for us, we're being very candid in terms of our votes are not free. So we need to go with the individuals who are going to represent us in the best and most formidable way, regardless of their political affiliation. But nonetheless, we're going to make sure that we hold everyone accountable. And if no one comes forth to do so, then we do it ourselves. Just to break down the process, if you will, in order to get on the ballot, there's only a couple of organizations who've been able to do so to knowledge, right? Or on a grander scale. You look at the Working Families Party, which is a multicultural and ethnic group that's across the country, but they're not specifically Black. And no love, no disrespect to the Working Families Party, like, you know, shout out to my man Maurice and whatnot. But what we're saying is that we want to create something that is specifically focused on our people. And developing and gaining ballot status is a process, but we're in this for the marathon. I mean, everybody likes to quote Nipsey, rest in peace to the king, and the marathon continues. Well, let's truly run this marathon and do what we have to do to get to where we need to be.
That's dope. So what I wanna know is, because this is something that I've been thinking about for years. Like, we've always been thinking about, we need something different. We need to start our own. What is the time process that you think it's gonna take? Okay, so in this amount of time, we should have this amount of people. Like, what would you be able to say that you think the amount of time is gonna take for this to be like a powerhouse voting bloc?
Yeah, I think it's no doubt like a 5 to 10 year plan. And you know, when we were starting this, and shout out to my man, Jay Morrison, there's a lot of folks who were having conversations, and he and I were having conversations in regards to how we work together and whatnot. And I think we have to be very candid in my personal estimation, like everybody doesn't have to do the exact same thing. And it's okay for us to work in multiple avenues and multiple lanes, But we need to be steadfast in regards to that we're going to do what we have to do for us. So while we're all working in our different respective lanes, that means that it's going to take some time, again, to corral folks and for some folks to say, hey, we're going to work for this work in this regard. And other folks are going to say, hey, we're going to work at it and look at it from this way. But when you look at a specific voting block, per se, we're willing to change our focus. So do we want to be something like the quote unquote Democrats or something like the Republican Party? I don't think that we have to be either of which, because they have literally like billions of dollars put behind them. But what we can do and where we can start, and again, this is within our 5 and 10 year plan, is on the local level in places like South Fulton, Georgia, or places like Brooklyn, right? Where we, well, even though you know Brooklyn is no longer Brooklyn as it used to be, it's not the home of Biggie and Jay. It doesn't look quite the same. But when we look at places like that where we have higher concentrations of our folks, can we get our folks together and say, listen, Democrats aren't doing what they're supposed to do for us. Republicans aren't doing what they're supposed to do for us. Let's get the signatures needed to get on the ballot and then run our own candidates. Like mm-hmm. those things, they don't take long. That's like a year-long process. You mm-hmm. literally just have to get the certain amount of signatures to qualify to be on the ballot, and usually 5 to 10% of the amount of persons who voted in the previous election. So you get those signatures, you get your candidate on the ballot, you register as your party, and then you run. It's actually quite that simple. We have to raise our money. We have to be able to support each other. But there's so many folks, like you alluded to, my son, you've been thinking about this. I mean, Puff, there's so many people who've been thinking about this. Like, let's pool our resources. And again, we don't all have to do it the exact same way, but we want to have an umbrella for folks to say, you can come under this mantra and we can move forward in some capacity together.
I say it all the time, unity is not uniformity. And I think that's what has stopped us from our progress, because everyone wants it to look one way.
Right. And
it doesn't have to look one way. We just got to be going to the same place. Like your car can look different than my car. We just got to be at the same place, you know? So I definitely appreciate what you're doing. Tamika, you have a question you want to ask?
So do you think that as a part of, because, and I want people to hear this, because I get folks, you know, running me down, you know, you just with the Democrats, you just, you know, you paid for by the Democrats. Why are you fighting for voting rights? It doesn't matter. You know, all of that. We hear it all the time. And I constantly say to people, there are folks like you who are working on building an apparatus. I tell them all the time, I've been in conversations with Puff about this for years, mm-hmm. trying to build an apparatus that gives us the money and also the political education and the political will to challenge some of these folks in different parties with our own candidate, as you said, and or come together and decide in whatever party, whether it be an independent, a Republican, or a Democrat, we're going to vote together so we can make a difference. Or we're coming together as the party demanding certain things be on these individuals' agenda. Because you have to be careful that if you know you're looking at, so for us in a situation like Trump and Biden, right? There are folks, you know, oh, well, neither one of them. Okay, fine. Absolutely. 270 something year old white men. We've never, ever thought that either one of them would be great and the great savior for our community. But we know what we were looking at, the difference between the two candidates. The question is, how do we have something where we're able to, in an organized fashion, when we're coming down to the last minute in an election like that, demand from both of them certain things? Now, some people will say, well, that's what Ice Cube was doing, right? Ice Cube was trying to force both candidates to speak to our issues. And we've said over and over again, and I want to get your opinion on this, which you always are honest opinion. What we've said is, it's very difficult to negotiate when you have missed the moment when there were multiple people in the field. Right, so at the time when there were 99 million people running for the Democratic nomination, was the time to have our Black Party, you know, our issues on the table to say of these two candidates, we want these things and to get them to commit. But to wait until there's two candidates and we're looking at some one person who killed 600,000 people by the time he was running for office by ignoring a true issue in terms of how people should have been taking care of themselves for a virus. And then we're looking at another person that's not great at all either, but they were very different. So is your, do you agree with what I'm saying? Or do you feel like we still should have abstained or just used it as an opportunity to say, hey, we may lose this one, but now let's just build our own party and leave the other two parties completely?
Well, I think you're right in all of it. And I think, again, like we have to be willing to understand that this game is so complex. And it is indeed a game that we have to be willing to play if we want to be able to change the outcomes of our people. This game is so complex and nuanced that there's multiple approaches that we have to be willing to take. So in my personal estimation, it's always the right time to mobilize Black folk. Absolutely. It's never too late in order for us to be able to mobilize each other. And Puff and I, we would have this discussion. And I mean, and I know you've had it. We've all had it. You know, shout out to my man, Stephen Green and Reverend Green and everybody else. Like, we've all had this talk, like maybe we're a little too late. Maybe we started, you know, we missed our mark because we kicked off in July of 2020. And essentially the two candidates were already picked. And now, like you alluded to, we don't have a great deal of leverage, quote unquote, to the layman's eye. But again, I don't ever believe that it's the wrong time for us to mobilize our people. And now that we have some footing under us, now that we're, the word is getting out, now that we're continuing to mobilize, that gives us that much more leverage in the midterm elections and furthermore in the 2024 presidential elections. But that's only on the federal level. When we talk about the local and state level, we always have leverage because there's elections, there are election cycles that are taking place all of the time. And let me be clear, like I'm a former elected official. I ran as a Democrat. I was seen as a quote unquote rising star in the Democratic Party. I was real cool with our former governor. Like, I get it. I understand the game, but that still doesn't mean that we don't have to do what we have to do for our folk. And just because we have friends in certain spaces doesn't mean that we negate the needs of our people on the local and state level, and obviously on the federal level, but at home in the streets. Like, when you two are going, and the rest of Until Freedom, shout out to Angelo and Sister Linda and everyone else, when y'all are going out in the streets and mobilizing and organizing, there's never a wrong time to do that. And you know, for me, 2 Chainz said something that always sticks with me. He said it on his last album, like, there's certain situations that make you care less about voting. And we have to be able to pierce through those things. When a mother loses her child and a kid is shot in the middle of the street, sometimes by, you know, one of our own because of many of the systemic issues that we have. Or like my son also often talks about kill coward culture and how we have to make sure we hold individuals accountable. Those individuals, when they're going through these things at certain moments and times, they're not necessarily thinking about the political apparatus. Where we come in is that we have to continue to remind them that these things are byproducts of systems, and these systems change by us being engaged. And these systems change by us being engaged with people who look like us, who care about us. And that's why, again, it's always the right time for us to do this work. That was a long answer, but.
No,
that was the answer. I definitely take that into consideration. You know, I just think for me, like what you said is definitely, but for me is this, the system is going to be there, right?
Right.
We can act like, and I tell people all the time, you don't got to vote, but the person who gets into office, the laws that they pass, whatever they do, you still going to follow the law. So if you decide that you're not going to vote in this election, cool. But you still going to stop at the green light. You still going to pay taxes, whatever laws they put into, you still have to, you just understand, as long as you acknowledge that, then we all okay. For me, I want to have a little bit of a say-so about the laws that are going. I want to have a little bit of say-so about things that are going to govern my life. So, you know, and it's to each his own. Some of us just feel like, forget the system. I'm just going to go about it, whatever. Me personally, I want to be engaged in every inch of the process that's going to have something to affect my life. But like you said, we don't all got to do it the same. I could vote, he cannot vote, but we all know that ultimately we got to get free. So long as you're doing something over there to get us free, I might be voting for these 1 or 2 laws that I know is going to give us a little more freedom. And you might be not voting and building an apparatus over there that's going to do something to help us sustain, but we all got to be doing something.
Right. And I think to your point, though, that's why we also need different kinds of candidates. Because individuals who relate to like where we're from and where we come from, I mean, honestly, they're like unicorns. And we need to be able to develop more of these unicorns while also getting our people to understand that there's no such thing as a perfect politician or a perfect elected official. That we can't put folks on these certain pedestals. You got to be, you know, the flyest dude who can articulate in a certain way, but still not do anything, but still kick it with the homies and so on and so forth. Like, those individuals are rare. But when we get persons who do run, whether they, you know, may come from certain environments or not, let's make sure that we train them and hold them accountable, but also we love on them so that they can pass policies that are going to be helpful for our people. And that's where...
And we have to, Mitch, I'm sorry, we have to wrap up, but because we have, we have to wrap up. But also we have to put our money where our mouth is. And so the last question real quick is, how much is it going to cost for our Black Party to get to stage two and then, you know, the ultimate stage? How much money do we need?
So we need about $10 million for us to go to the next level. And with that $10 million, we'll be able not only to bring on more state directors, but get field directors on the local level. And that's really where we're trying to place a great deal of our emphasis. In addition to that, the training models, and again, shout out to Teslin, but we want to make sure that these trainings are free and affordable to available to all of our folks. So, you know, donate at iBlackParty.com, www.iBlackParty.org. You can look us up on all of our socials, at Our Black Party. And you know, we're here. We're here for us, but this is a marathon. So let's keep running.
www.OurBlackParty.com.org. Okay. www.OurBlackParty.org. Yeah. $10 million. So that means $1, $5, $10, $100, $100,000. We need it all.
We need it.
We need our Black Party.
Much love, y'all. We appreciate y'all.
We appreciate you, King. Keep doing the work, man. We right beside you, man.
No doubt, thanks, no doubt. We'll link soon.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Shout out to our brother, Dr. Wes Bellamy, you know, and just breaking down our Black Party and just, you know, just showing what is needed right now. And a lot of people don't understand, like I said during the interview, it's not about uniformity, it's about unity. We don't got to do the same things at the same exact time. We just got to be going to the same place and believe that we're going to get there. And sometimes we got to take different routes, and there's nothing wrong with that. So I just want to commend him and all the brothers and sisters who are on the committee for Our Black Party, who started it, who seen the need for it, and are filling in those gaps.
Yeah, I mean, Our Black Party, all of these things, just listening to the need, we can't fail, Our Black Party, all of that together. I think it's all of that, like you said, together. And it's not one thing, but it's all things, and certainly a focus on Black people. And I think, and that's what hearing Wes say that and knowing that Congresswoman Lee also feels that way is super important.
It definitely is. And you know, and in light of how dope this interview was and how powerful it was, and just listening to the Congresswoman, you know, my I don't get it is going to be real simple. And it's not going to be followed by a lot of talk or anything. It's just that I don't get it.
So I don't get to talk. No problem. I don't want to anyway. So you probably go ahead, what you don't probably, get, and let's go home.
You won't want to after I say this. What I don't get is how the police who killed Breonna Taylor are still not in jail.
Arrest the cops that killed Breonna Taylor.
And with that said, I'm not going to always be right. Tamika Mallory is not going to always be wrong, but we will both always, and I mean always, be authentic.
All right, peace now.
That's how we own it!
The hit movie Bob Marley One Love is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Celebrate the life of an icon who inspired generations with his message of love, peace, and unity. Rated PG-13. Head to ParamountPlus.com/OneLove to try it free now.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
I'm Johnny B. Good, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.